One of the great things about the podcast that we do, Bill, is it's all very natural. There are no advertisements. There's no corporate sponsorship. There's no Bill and Frank selling out.
You got that right. Now, speaking of selling out, a student came up to me just the other day and offered us advertising space in the program at the school play.
The school play? Where is that and what time is it happening?
That school play is called Apostrophes, and it's at Sir Winston Churchill Secondary School in St. Catharines on April 25th and 26th. That's a Thursday and Friday at 7 p.m. for just the cost of $10.
$10? I would expect that a school play would cost upwards of $100 per seat.
Well, you're wrong there, Frank, because this play is all about bringing the people in and the joys of guilt-free pleasures, because they're featuring Bonnie Tyler's Holding Out for a Hero as its key musical dance number.
Well, I think you're my hero, Bill, telling me about this great deal and fantastic night out in St. Catharines.
Well, I hope you can see how great we are at advertising things, especially when they agree to put our podcast in their program.
On today's episode of Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures, we talk about a spacey, twinkly song.
We talk about a song that was featured in a movie that was pretty much universally despised by critics, but as time has gone by, it's surprisingly watchable.
And a song, despite their shallow lyrics, still has a deep, deep meaning to Bill and I.
You're listening to our take on Starships. Nothing's gonna stop us now. Well, Frank, in a rare moment, I was actually ready for the podcast before you, in terms of I was actually sitting in the room where we record, because you came a bit late, because you were watching.
I was watching Mannequin for what feels like the first time, but I know is not the first time.
This is March Movie Madness Month, and you are probably listening to this in April. Or the very end of March, but we are doing a special series, just finishing it up, I think.
Yes.
On music and movies together.
Yeah, we're featuring songs that played very prominent roles in specific movies.
And for this final film, we picked something that I don't think I even thought about as a movie in a long, long time.
I don't think I can say this enough. The movie Mannequin is ridiculous.
Yeah, you're coming in here a bit rattled, and I feel like we need to kind of work through what you just experienced with Mannequin.
My thoughts on the movie Mannequin, which again, ridiculous, absolutely bonkers. So I'm thinking, how does this movie get made? Because this is the 80s, right? The 80s were a bonkers time to begin with.
It's insane.
It's bonkers.
It's bonkers. As I was just going to say, as Frank would say, it's bonkers. And so Mannequin is the movie we picked. Now, of course, it's not on the strength of Mannequin that we picked this movie. It's on the strength of the song. So I know, Frank, you're just recovering from that week in Yukon dog sledding. You've been staying up late. You're still running crazy races for who knows what reason.
I don't even know anymore.
Okay. I thought maybe if we just play the hook of this song, which of course, it will reveal itself right now, you will find that energy that you need. Are you ready?
I hope so. We built this city. Oh, no. Bill, no. Why? Why would you do that to me? I'm coming in low to begin with. You're just, oh.
There was a special request that I don't let up on you, because this is our second time that we've talked about Starship.
Yeah.
And you, of course, clearly haven't come around to
Built the City. No, We Built the City is a terrible song.
But on the flip side, I guess, for you would be this song is incredible.
Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now by Starship is a great song. It's a typical sort of 80s power ballad, but there are parts of this song, make it powerful, and it's great.
I feel it might be, and I know I said this about 45 times, it might be perfect in terms of what it does for a 1980s song, for the type of song that is going to immediately bring you back to a time and place, whatever it was, whether it was watching Mannequin, whether it was being at the beach in the 80s, litter all over the place, or whatever it is, this song just is a time machine.
Yeah, it transports you back to a, I'm not going to say simpler or better time, but a different time.
That's very safe, Frank. Way to go. All right, so we are going to talk a lot more about Mannequin. I've done some deep dive research.
There's a lot to say about this movie.
There is.
It's mostly bonkers and ridiculous. Those are the words that I'm going to say the most of.
Okay. This song was written specifically for the movie.
Yeah.
So we have two songwriters. We got Diane Warren and Albert Holland.
Hammond.
That's right. I did my research.
Yeah.
So they were given, I think, the script.
Yeah.
To read. They said, we really liked it, so we wanted to give a song that sort of packed a certain punch. How is that even possible? What script did they read? This is a ridiculous script. Yeah. And there must be moments in the script where it just says, long montage of characters dressing up in costumes and pretending to be people.
Yeah, that's probably half the movie.
Yeah, surprisingly watchable. I know it's awful. I know it is awful. Roger Ebert generally is a pretty lenient reviewer.
Yeah.
But he gave this a half star.
Yeah.
And he talked about it being dead on arrival and talked about watching 90 minutes of deadness. I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel it was dead. I felt there was some sort of life to it and something very likable about a movie this terrible.
It's one of those, it's so bad, it's good kind of movies.
Yeah. But even in the midst, I remember watching it. I knew it was stupid.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's something about this. And it has proven itself over the last 40 years. People keep coming back to it. People talk about how much they like it. Now, of course, on Rotten Tomatoes, it has like 30%. And even like the reviews by people have it at 40%. But there is a audience for this movie.
Well, it's funny because we did the recording of Blaze of Glory with Kate.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned how we were going to do this song. And her comments, oh, I love Mannequin. Oh, I wish I could do that song.
Yeah, it's weird. It's out there. Now, also strange, if you're living in Canada, you cannot stream this on any of the major services. You cannot rent this from Apple, Amazon, YouTube. It's not even rentable. To find it, I think both of us had to go find someone in the city, meet us in a dark alley, pass us a VHS tape, and then also a VCR, I guess, because we needed that.
And then we watched back it. In the 80s when you used to be able to rent VCRs?
Yeah. Well, that was when we first started watching movies, you didn't own a VCR. Those things were super expensive.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And now I think I have at least two downstairs.
Yeah.
And I keep them because they'll come back in fashion.
Oh, exactly. They're right beside your three crock pots.
That hurts because it's true. But I'm glad you've been able to find something downstairs in that basement. That's good. The song is written by Diane Warren and Albert Hammond. And this is Diane Warren's first number one hit.
Yeah.
She's previously written a song we've already done, Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge.
Yeah.
And Albert Hammond's already had a number one with a Leo Sayer song. We've also covered Mr. Leo Sayer before.
Yes. Yep.
And he's done a ton of work, ton of songs, including, I think it comes after this, One Moment in Time by Whitney Houston.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Albert Hammond is the father of Albert Hammond Jr., who's in the Strokes.
That's right. That's right. And I guess we know this. I think it's on the Song Facts page where Albert Hammond says that when he wrote the song, he was thinking about his upcoming marriage to his girlfriend.
Yeah.
That he'd been living with for 7 years, but he's trying to get his divorce to go through.
Yeah, that was a prolonged divorce, eh?
It was.
They were, what, 7 years together?
Seven years together. Yeah. So who knows? Hollywood, 80s, I don't know. I looked up his net worth and I thought it would be worth a lot more, but he might have lost some money along the way.
Well, alimony and all that, right?
Yeah. He's talked about how Nothing's Going to Stop Us Now is his sort of thing. And Diane Warren, of course, loves to write songs that are over the top.
Yeah.
And speak the heart's truth, so to speak. With that in mind, we have Grace Slick, who's famously prickly.
Yeah, I think that's a polite way of saying things, yes.
She hates this song.
She hates everything that she did with Starship.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, you and I both agree We Built the City was incredible. First number one.
Did not agree.
Yep. Sarah, who was brought into the city they built, incredible song. And now that they had both, that great song, We Built the City, and Sarah.
Stop putting words into my mouth.
You got it. Well, I figured you'd come around after a while.
You figured 14, wrong.
Yeah, 14 months. And then this song, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now, is like the rocket that just fires out of that city into the sky. And it's incredible. But Grace Slick hates it. And she said, what's gonna stop us now? It's a weird comment, she says. She says, a Mack truck, which I think she meant metaphorically.
Yeah.
Relationships die. Like, oh my goodness. Okay, Grace.
She had talked about how she can't get behind the song because she knows that relationships can be fleeting and they don't always work out. So her comment is like, well, I don't believe in this song, so how can I sing it? And she left the band shortly after this song came out.
Right, to go back to Jefferson Airplane for that one last album.
So she was 47 when this song came out.
Right.
And she made a comment along the lines of, any rock star who is over 50 needs to retire because they look ridiculous.
Grace, Grace, Grace.
Well, she retired shortly before she turned 50,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, she did.
Also, she was the oldest female singer with a number one single at 47 until Cher got the record in 99 with her song Believe when Cher was 52.
Grace, listen, number one, you're a pop singer. Pop deals in the world of hyperbole, heart's truth, all these sorts of things where we live in the sort of platonic forms of what love could be if we didn't live in a fallen world. That's what you sing about.
My thought on Grace Slick as a pop singer, because it's tough to reconcile Starship with Jefferson Airplane.
Like
White Rabbit.
Don't You Want Somebody to Love?
Oh, Don't You Want Somebody to Love? Those are anthems from the 60s.
Right.
I'm wondering if she didn't know what she was getting herself into by the time Starship rolled
around. That's a good question. I mean, I'd still ask her, do you think White Rabbit speaks more truth? Like, is that going to be the more honest song? Or Don't You Want Somebody to Love? I guess it's a question.
Yeah.
But Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. It sounds like something someone would say when they're in love and they're just getting started in a relationship. That seems like a fair comment. So the bands are disconnected enough that it's not like the same band morphing.
Yeah.
It's like a lot leaving, a couple staying, or leaving and coming back. And then by the time you get to Starship, it's its own thing.
Yeah.
But I don't listen to Jefferson Airplane. I don't listen to Jefferson Starship. I listen to Starship.
I don't think I know anything by Jefferson Starship. I listen to Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah. Now. I think it's like a 70s thing that just never hit with us because we were out of that time. We were born in the 70s, but not remembering it.
Yeah. And this is full-blown corporate rock. So this is kind of striking a chord for us.
Yeah. I'm all in on corporate rock. And you know what? Grace was too, because she was in it for the hoopla. She was in it for the moolah.
She was in
it for the money. This was a moneymaker for her. She made her money.
Oh, I thought you were just quoting, We Built This City.
Oh, I was doing both. And you'll be getting lots of that, Frank. Oh, don't you worry. I'm not going to let up. I still have, I don't know if I want to call it revenge. Maybe retribution is a kind
I'm already miserable. I don't know why I have to make things worse.
I feel like it's easy to win then. You're kind of like Rocky III when Mix had the heart attack and I'm Clever Lang and you're not ready.
I like that almost every single song from March Movie Madness Month references Rocky III at one point.
It is important. Well, Eye of the Tiger next year, let's hope. Anyways, Grace Slick writes this song off. That's fine, Grace. We're not writing this song off. This song is wicked awesome. And it's from a movie that is seemingly insipid and stupid, but it's also kind of awesome in its weird way. It's amazing that it's watchable. I'll tell you why it's watchable, Frank. The actors in it are so likable that no matter how stupid it is, we want to see Andrew McCarthy. He's great. Kim Cattrall, great.
James Spader with that ridiculous haircut.
Yeah, unreal. Unreal, but we got the guy from Police Academy.
That's right.
G.W. Bailey.
Yeah, and Kim Cattrall is from Police Academy as well.
That's right. It's kind of a reunion of sorts. Now, G.W. Bailey gave some interesting intel on this.
Okay.
He said that there was this movie called Touch of Venus that they were most likely using as a reference point.
Oh, okay.
And that came out in 1948. I hope I have the name right. I watched a bunch of it today. And so in Touch of Venus, there's a, I don't know if it's a store or some sort of business that has the statue of Venus. It's supposed to be on display. Mm-hmm. And this other lower level guy who works there is supposed to fix the curtains that reveal Venus figure. Yeah, yeah. And while he's working on it, he sees how beautiful this Venus is. And then he kisses Venus on the lips. While he's fixing the curtains, he gets tapped on the shoulder by Venus.
Oh,
and it's that classic Ford's, hey there, don't go touching me. I'm working on these curtains.
Yeah, I got work to do here.
Yeah, and then he says, whoa, wait a second. Whoa, and then he faints. And of course, it goes through the whole thing. He falls in love with Venus. And so she's like the statue that came to life. And so it is very much kind of like Mannequin. So there's a lot going on in there.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but the statue of Venus de Milo doesn't have arms, correct?
No, this was just Venus with arms.
Okay.
Like, is it like the Columbia thing? Was she Venus?
No.
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 She Venus was Lady America.
Yeah, she...
The Columbia. The Columbia Pictures?
Yeah. That's, No. That's something completely different.
Okay. But no, this is not Venus de Milo. This is just straight up Venus.
Okay.
This one, she definitely had arms.
Okay.
Either way, that's the movie. You can watch on YouTube. That's right up there.
Okay. There we go.
There's also a Twilight Zone episode called The After Hours, where a woman is trapped in a department store, but it turns out like she might be a mannequin.
Oh, okay.
And the mannequins all talk to her. It's just like most of those Twilight Zone episodes. So creepy that I can't watch it, even though it's not inappropriate. This took me a long time to say, Frank, but all this to say that the idea for Mannequin isn't just this sort of, as Tom Brihan says, some cocaine fever dream from the 80s. There is like previous material. It's just odd that someone would choose to make this movie. They always like to reuse things. Yeah. Or, I mean, someone could come up with the idea of a mannequin coming to life.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. There are so many movies in the 80s with these sort of weird ideas. Like, how many switcheroo movies are there in the 80s? I can count like four.
There's a ton.
Yeah. So Mannequin's not out of place. It's just that it's a movie without any focus. Is that a word? Like, she wants to have her own life, right? This is why she convinces the Egyptian gods to, like, take her away.
Yeah, she basically is a time traveler.
But she gets to go into all these other places, but then chooses to become a mannequin.
In 1987.
Yeah, and then someone had written it in a review. It was from the Philadelphia Observer or something like that. Yeah. Where it says, this is, like, the greatest 80s movie promoting Philadelphia. Of all the places, she chose to go to Philadelphia. Yeah. To be a mannequin. And so that's it. She recognized an Andrew McCarthy true love, and somehow he sculpted this mannequin.
Yeah. That, in his first job that he got fired from,
right,
in the movie.
Because he couldn't hold a job.
No.
Because he's a true artist. Because
he's an artist.
Yeah. We go through this, but I mean, her purpose was to help him to decorate really great windows.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to talk about this movie other than this song doesn't come on to the very, very end.
To the very, the wedding scene.
Yeah.
Where they get married in a window display.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't remember the 80s the way that they actually happened. I don't think there was ever large throngs of people clamoring around a window display at a department store.
No, you're right. And it's very 80s in its conceit about what success is.
Yeah.
It's still this bizarro world of, I'm an artist. I will make it big by creating window displays to sell stuff as an artist.
Yeah.
And she feels that she's brought this guy new meaning. And the idea of a family business that's really just a department store, which I thought kind of killed businesses anyways.
Well, the mom and pop store.
Yeah. And was this on while Golden Girls was going on?
87?
Yeah. Yeah, it must be. Did they de-age Estelle Getty by 20 years? I didn't know they had that
technology. No, actually, she was one of the younger people on the Golden Girls.
She was the youngest person on the Golden Girls. There's a little bit of trivia for you.
Yeah, she was younger than her on-screen daughter. Yeah. That's bonkers.
Now, we will get to this song, but I got one more piece of trivia for you, Frank.
About Mannequin or about the Golden Girls?
About one of the people in Mannequin.
Okay.
Kim Cattrall dated what famous Canadian politician?
Oh, Pierre Trudeau.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Yeah.
Because she's Canadian too, right?
She is British American, but kind of lived a lot in Canada through her life. And then most of those movies she started out in were Canadian movies.
Yeah, because she was in
Porky's.
Porky's, yes. Which is a famous Canadian success story.
Yeah. All right, Frank, let's talk about this song. Can we do that?
Have to? Can we not talk about the bonkers movie Mannequin? We haven't even talked about Hollywood Montrose.
No, we haven't. I think we'll come to Hollywood Montrose later, maybe. What do you want to talk about now?
I will say the portrayal is a gross stereotype.
It is. Now, placing that stereotype within the 80s, it's not that far out of place. That this is what they do with characters.
Yeah.
And
kind of over the top.
Over the top. And so this is where the sort of the gay character is placed in this way. But I will say this much. There is something different going on in this movie than any of the other 80s movies I've seen. He wasn't like... the term pathologized properly put there, where you have Crocodile Dundee with this horrible trans moment.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And then other movies like, I guess Police Academy made fun of it with the Blue Oyster Bar.
Yeah.
They were just this other thing. But he's an actual character, and he accepts Andrew McCarthy because he has a different way of being. Because
he's a true artist.
He's a true artist, but also because he loves this mannequin. He says, oh, I have my life too. And then, just hear me out here, when G.W. Bailey, who's a captain, whatever his name is, which is also weird because he's captain as well in the Police Academy movies, when he talks about how much he hates Hollywood Montrose and makes fun of him.
Yeah.
Andrew McCarthy defends Hollywood Montrose and says, I'd rather be with him than a bigot like you, which is something you wouldn't really hear in 80s movies.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to keep going here.
Okay.
Okay. Hollywood Montrose is like pivotal at the end because he uses the fire hose.
That's right.
To stop all those people trying to stop Andrew McCarthy from getting Kim Cattrall put through the grinder.
Yes. Hollywood Montrose is a pivotal, important character. The stereotyping of it is it's a little uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah. He never takes those glasses off.
No.
So there are articles written on Hollywood Montrose as being an important character in the development of portrayals of gay characters in movies.
No, I can see that.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the best we're going to get out of Mannequin for something that people are going to talk about.
Ow! Well, roll over Bill Shakespeare. That is the sweetest sentiment these ears have ever heard.
No.
This song is so good. It lifts up a movie that is so bad.
Yeah.
That when you hear the musical cues all throughout it, you know, there's some good music. There's a great Belinda Carlisle song that's not findable on any streaming service.
Yes, that's right.
My Wildest Dreams.
I think, yeah.
Great. It sounded a lot like the Go-Go's.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But it was Belinda Carlisle solo. That's great. And then it ends with this. And this song is, I mean, fairly epic in terms of its opening. It opens with like a drum fill. It's not a drum fill. It's just drums.
Those pounding drums.
Pounding drums.
And you can feel from that this drummer is someone who would beat up the lead singer of his own band.
Yeah. He would, if only he had actually drummed on this.
Oh, that's right.
However, when they did the drumming, which is the producer, who is Narada Michael Walden. He did it because Peter Wolf refused. Peter Wolf.
That's right. Yeah. Their usual producer for Starship.
The man who made We Build the City was like, you know what? I don't hear a hit here. So in comes Narada Michael Walden, who worked with Aretha Franklin and Whitney Houston and did How Will I Know, my all-time favorite, I think, Whitney Houston song. Hard to tell because I Want to Dance with Somebody is incredible.
Yeah.
But How Will I Know is special to me. He produced that, and he nails it here. Claims to be going for a Phil Spector sound. Well, you can go for whatever. He got his own sound out of here, and it's incredible. So he did most of the drumming, I think, or at least did the drum track. Brought in some other people. There's some names he gave here. I have them here.
Yeah, I have the people on the song. So the drumming was done by Robert Bongo Bob Smith.
That's right. And someone named Dave Frazier was in there too. I don't know if he was doing drum programming with him.
Okay, could be, yeah.
Yeah, and then Walden said, I was thinking of Donnie Baldwin, who's the drummer, and trying to emulate his sound. Because in one article it said that Starship was on tour and that's why he couldn't get them in.
Oh, okay.
And then another article was he preferred working with his own people.
Yeah,
that's David Foster-esque.
That's the way I understood it. Yeah. He's like, no, I got my own people for this song.
Yeah, I'm almost certain this is the case because it's the 80s where a producer could be king, right? And so also I think he's probably terrified of Donnie Baldwin.
Oh, yeah.
In the video, Donnie Baldwin, one, he looks super cool, but also, to quote Tom Brihan, someone you don't mess with.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah. So, anyway, we talked about this, I believe, on the We Built This City, but poor Mickey Thomas got into an altercation with him where I think by the end he had titanium plates put in his face and they might have had to lift his whole face off.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
John Travolta, Nicolas Cage style, and used 60 stitches to get him back in.
That's right. It
looks pretty good for somebody who's been
Frankensteined after an altercation with their drummer.
It's horrible. That's just, and so to Mickey Thomas's credit, I believe we talked about this before, he never charged the drummer.
That's right, yeah. So, 'cause I think he kind of took responsibility because he wasn't being
his best self.
No.
Yeah, he talked about how it's really tough being on the road. And then if you and then if you throw alcohol and drugs in the mix, it can be really messy.
Yeah.
So who knows what went on? I think, well, Mickey knows. And well, actually, I don't think he knows. I think
probably not.
Oh, man.
Poor. He woke up with a new face.
Yeah. Now he looks like Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's still touring with Mickey Thomas's Starship, which is just Mickey Thomas and whoever else will sing his songs with him. Speaking of those drums, let's listen to those opening beats to get us on track here. All right, so we got a couple things going there. There's the drums, like, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Not like the gated reverb Phil Collins thing, though, right? It's a little
gated
different.
Reverb snare, if I've learned anything from the episode with Derek.
Right, right. Okay. Not quite that, but it is 80s, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
And then it's the, I'm going to use the term sparkly keyboards.
I had spacey.
Okay.
Like they came from a starship.
Yeah. Well, I believe when you're out in space, the stars twinkle. So twinkly? Maybe can we meet halfway there?
I'm going to stick with spacey. You can say twinkly.
Oh, no. I'm sticking with sparkly.
Okay.
So either way, we know what we're feeling here is good feels.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. What a start. And so being a 10-year-old, which is what we were when we heard this, holy cow.
I know as a 10-year-old, when those drums came in, you're like, yes. And it's not a huge pump-up song or anything, but it got you excited.
It did. In those times, you had a lot of music playing on the radio. A lot of it wasn't that good. I mean, it's hard to think back to that, but for younger listeners listening, you see, what happens is we just erase memories of those really bad songs. Unless, of course, you don't like what we do here. And then we just keep those bangers, so to speak, as the young kids said a few years ago, in here. And so I remember hearing this on the radio and just being like, oh, good. I'm going to enjoy the next couple minutes because it's going to make me happy.
Yeah.
This song makes me very happy.
Yeah. It's not a song of longing. It's not a song of wanting. It's a song of celebration and triumph.
Well put. Triumphant. That's it. This is a song where you're there. This is a song to be sung on the summit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's go through verse one. Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here beside you, what? So much to give you. This love in my heart that I'm feeling for you. I couldn't resist. His want is...
He draws that out, right?
And he goes right up there.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here beside you, want so much to give you. This love in my heart that I'm feeling for you.
This is a wedding song.
Well, it was written for Albert Hammond's wedding.
And for the Mannequin's wedding.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Tom Brihan described, we've mentioned Tom Brihan a lot. He does the Stereo Gum articles on the number ones. Mm-hmm. He called Mickey Thomas's voice something akin to a wet towel.
A wet, damp pillow, I think it was.
Oh, that's
Or a damp pillow.
Oh, I feel that's grossly unfair. This is perfect for what it needs to do.
Mickey Thomas is a dry pillow.
Yeah, he is. It's something I would lay my head on, his voice. And so I feel like...
That's not weird at all.
No, I feel that came out totally wrong, but it is a voice that brings me comfort. When we do Sarah, which will be our last Starships, maybe, We have an argument for another Starship song, but I'll bring that up later. Oh. Frank, Starship's great.
Are they?
Well, in my world, 3 out of 3 is a whole. In your world, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. How's that go?
Can't believe you used my Meatloafian logic against me.
Yeah, that's right. So I feel the Mickey Thomas vocals work just fine, and there's not really a lot to say about the deeper meaning behind this. Look in your eyes, I see paradise. That is a line where you're going for it. Every swing is for a home run.
Yeah.
Right? There's no subtlety and no nuance.
Again, there's hyperbole all over the place.
That's right.
Right.
Mickey Thomas's voice works so well because it has its, maybe this word will work, counterpoint?
Yes.
Okay.
The gray slick part.
Oh.
That to me is what makes the song.
And this is where she comes in, right? And she comes in with what I call the rock and roll pronunciation. I didn't know until a week ago that the words were, let him say we're crazy. I always thought it was Nancy went crazy. I don't care about that. That's what I thought she said. And so I've assumed Kim Cattrall's character's name was Nancy.
Yeah.
But now it makes a lot more sense. Yeah. Let him say we're crazy. I'm always amazed at rock voices, how they could take a lyric and morph it into something that works, but also is totally ununderstandable.
Yeah.
That's the worst word I could come up with.
You have a half degree in English, don't you?
Just a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. I majored in suffixes, not prefixes.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Okay. So let them say we're crazy. I don't care about that. Put your hand in my hand. Baby, don't ever look back. Let the world around us just fall apart. Baby, we can make it if we're heart to heart.
Let them say we're crazy.
And she says this vocal, like, with every gusto.
There's a, let them say we're crazy. I don't care about that. Like, the way she sings it is...
It's so unique.
She's just going for it.
Yeah. I don't know. There's no other voice in rock and roll. And so maybe I should listen to White Rabbit and early Jefferson Airplane again.
Yeah.
A little bit of trivia for you. I don't know if you know this, Frank, but she was actually supposed to do the Mickey Thomas part, and he was supposed to do that part.
I thought I read something about that too, yeah.
Because her voice lends itself more to a lower register, but they gave her the soprano, so to speak.
Yeah, the high part, yeah. And she just belts it.
Belts it. And you know whose idea it was, according to at least the Billboard Book of Number Ones?
Frank Stallone.
Yeah. No, he's working on one of the Rocky movies then.
Gotcha, yeah. Okay.
It was Donnie Baldwin,
drummer,
who's just hovering there with his fisticuffs ready.
He's just
where he looked at the producer with his fists up in the air and said, hey, listen, I think Gray should do the other part. And they said when they did it, everything came together.
And it works so well. I really can't picture this song sung any other way with Gray Slick doing the opening part.
Well, you wouldn't be thinking about it because then no one would care because it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
She does the vocal. The one day, and then Mickey Thomas does it the next day. So she did her vocal,
yeah, okay.
And then he came in to do the other part.
Oh, okay. So she did hers first. Okay.
Yeah. So I guess they weren't together singing.
Yeah.
Which is very 80s too. It's like, no, we'd rather have you in a box over here. And you go to this box and don't ever mesh together.
Well, it's like Endless Love. Diana Ross and Lionel Richie weren't in the same studio together ever.
Oh my goodness. I guess that's what friends are for also.
Yes, that's
kind of
right.
True.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Not a lot to say about those lyrics.
No, just the way that they're sung.
Yeah. But there is something about let them say we're crazy. So this feels kind of like a young love or a love that people are like, whoa, I don't think so. Maybe you're jumping into this too soon. For like the guy, you just got divorced. Why would you want to marry?
No, he wasn't even divorced.
Yeah, you're not even divorced. Why would you marry your girlfriend of 7 years?
Yeah.
That you've been living with. So let him say we're crazy. I don't care about that. Yeah. Don't ever look back. And the idea of the world falling apart, it doesn't matter as long as you're with the person you love. Well, that's love. At least that version of it.
And that sort of idea comes up again in the chorus.
Yeah. And I guess we should go there.
Mm-hmm.
And we can build this dream together, standing strong forever. Nothing's going to stop us now. And if this world runs out of lovers, we'll still have each other. Nothing's going to stop us. Nothing's going to stop us now.
Standing strong forever. Nothing's going to stop us now.
So that line of, and if this world runs out of lovers, we'll still have each other. My understanding of that is everyone else is just mix matching with everybody else until there's no one who loves anyone anymore. But the idea that the love between these two is so sincere and honest and true and pure that they don't switch around. All these other lovers are mashing up with all these other lovers.
Right. But they
but these two lovers, they're heart to heart.
Right, right. So they might actually stick together.
Yes.
So I had polyamory subtext question mark on mine.
We had the same idea.
Same basically. Idea.
Yeah.
It's a really strange and ridiculous line. If this world runs out of lovers, we'll still have each other. And like, well, wait a second. Isn't that the whole point in these songs? Like, you kind of like monogamy is a big part of these songs.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Before we go into verse two, though, we mentioned those spacey keyboards. You really hear them at the end of that chorus. It's just almost like the Northern Lights.
Yeah, sparkly. All right, so verse two. I'm so glad I found you. I'm not going to lose you.
Yeah.
I love when he hits those high parts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whatever it takes, I will stay here with you. Take it to the good times. See it through the bad times. Whatever it takes is what I'm going to do.
I'm so glad I found you. I'm not going to lose you. Whatever it takes, I will stay here with you. Take it to the good times. See it through the bad times. Whatever it takes is what I'm going to do.
Well, don't need to dive into those lyrics because you could break your neck.
Yeah.
It's pretty much, that's what it is.
Pretty shallow. This is a Diane Warren special.
Yeah. And I feel that you don't look for a profound lyric usually in a bride and groom song even, right? No. Like this is like, hey, listen.
We love each other and that's all we need. And then we get back into that pre-chorus.
Yeah.
Grace Slick. Let them say we're crazy. What do they know? Just love the way she sings that. Yeah. It is so good.
And there's a shift because instead of saying, put your hand in my hand, she says, put your arms around me, baby, don't ever let go. You know where this is from? The motorcycle scene.
Oh, yes. That's right. Put your arms around
me. Yeah, because she says, won't it look crazy to have a mannequin on the back of your motorcycle? And he's basically said, I think he might have said, let him say we're crazy. Just put your arms around me.
Yes, that's right.
So there it is in the movie.
I just watched that about an hour and a half ago. I should have remembered that.
Well, you block things out for your own safety, I guess. Let the world around us just fall apart. Baby, we can make it if we're heart to heart.
Let him say we're crazy. What do they know? Put your arms around me, baby. Don't ever let go. Let the world around us just fall apart. Baby, we can make it if we're heart to heart.
It is kind of crazy watching a movie where a guy is on a motorcycle with a mannequin behind him and he's being chased by a car.
Yeah.
And the things that you jump in alleys in these movies?
Yeah, it's bonkers. Yeah. The movie's ridiculous.
The movie's ridiculous. And really, alleys should be able to handle a car driving through it because that's why they're alleys. Anyways, back to the chorus. We get the same chorus, right?
Yeah.
And the chorus is amazing, but it's going to lead and quickly to a bridge. I feel like it shows up early, this bridge. And I have written here that this bridge is peak Mickey. Because Mickey Thomas has to bring his all to this because he's now up against Grace Slick.
Because it's kind of almost a call and answer, call and response type of bridge.
And when you are going for Grace Slick, you best not miss. He begins with, ooh, all that I need is you. And when you hear his ooh, it's like, wait a sec, is this Mickey or Grace? Like he's
exactly,
going.
Right?
Yeah. And then she says, all that I ever need. Like, oh yeah, there's her voice because she's really powerful. Mm-hmm. And then Mickey's like, all right, I got this. And all that I want to do, going there. And then they come together and say, is hold you forever and ever and ever. And
then, hey, that's the Mickey part.
That's the Mickey part. It incredible bridge. Incredible bridge, because there's a lot going on here. I did want to talk about the hay part. Are you able to actually get to the hay part? Like, when you hear the song, do you get to the hay?
I need to take a breath.
Right. Do you miss it, though, like I did every time I try to do it?
I'm usually probably a beat or two behind.
Yeah, I can't get it. Also, this would be in a category, but I'm just going to say it now. This feels like a great karaoke song.
Yeah.
But I feel it all falls apart at the bridge because you got to somehow get there and hit those notes.
You got to get there. And the Mickey Thomas part, because he is really pulling out all the stops at that point.
Yeah. And you have to do this without like blowing your voice.
Yeah.
And then after you blow your voice during karaoke, we hit this great musical interlude.
The guitar solo is awesome.
Awesome. And it's the talking 80s guitar. Not the Van Halen talking, but just to me, these 80s guitars talk.
Yeah.
But if it's karaoke, you're just standing there and you have to stand there while it plays.
Just kind of sway around a little bit, right?
Yeah. I'd pretend I was flying like Kim Cattrall.
Oh, yeah. That's right. On the hand glider.
Yeah. Yeah. So that musical interlude was something, and it was like featuring the guitar in ways where other songs in the 80s would feature a saxophone, but we get the electric guitar.
Yeah.
And then we go to key change, I think.
Yes, I think so.
And then from there, we're repeating those choruses.
The choruses. Yeah, the chorus goes twice more, and then we get an outro.
And I mean, once we have the nothing's gonna stop us, whoa, I have written here, but it's Grace holding that note. Yeah. And then it's like the outro, which is about a 45 seconds to me to a minute.
It takes a long time to get through.
And she just goes all over the place, but not really all over the place. She just keeps going higher and higher.
Because she is the one that has those punctuating statements at the end. So, and we can build this dream together. Hey, baby. That's the way it sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly like that.
Yeah. I was thinking of that Dirty Dancing song, but yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to picture her in the studio. She must have just been
47, yeah.
Right. And she's 47 and nailing these notes and doing the work. So she talks so disparagingly about this song. Mm-hmm. But when she was in the studio, she gave it her all.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Consummate professional in the studio.
Totally. It's incredible. Now, the music video for this song is the type of music video I would probably make as well.
Yeah, because it kind of retells the story of the movie a little bit.
Yeah. And so it opens with Mickey coming by on his motorcycle.
Harley Davidson. They made sure that they got that in the shot.
Right, there it is. And he sees the Grace Slick statue. And I think immediately they give you a shot.
Or mannequin.
I got to get this right. He sees the Grace Slick mannequin. And then I think immediately they give us the shot in the movie.
Yeah.
And you know what? And it's pretty affecting in the movie that Andrew McCarthy is so impressed with the mannequin. And it's actually kind of moving. I'm like, what is happening to me watching this movie? Did you find it as moving? I mean, I know you cried during Barbie. Did you cry during Mannequin?
No, I did not.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't cry either, Frank. I didn't cry at all. I wasn't moved by any of it. So anyways, back to the video.
Yeah.
Grace Slick comes to life, so to speak. And I can't tell if they're in love or they just want to sing a song together.
I think they just want to sing a song together.
Yeah. And when she says, put your hand in mine, she actually puts his hand in hers.
Yeah.
So I like the literalism. And then Mickey Thomas, not the greatest actor, but definitely has a community theater vibe. But no, it's not fair to my friends in community theater. So let's say that's like maybe a bit of a grade six
play. School play,
yeah. Because he does the look at the camera, shrug his shoulders, like, oh, hey, I got to go over. He looks, so he looks directly at the camera, which the director must have told him to do. And then they go and sing. And both of them don't lip sync as though they've sung the song before. And it's kind of weird to me, unless this is how you actually sing. I don't know. It seems weird to me that you people who sang the song can't.
Well, you would know how you sing a song because I always sing looking directly in a mirror and I watch my mouth.
Right, right. Maybe they don't do these things.
Yeah. Maybe that's the big difference between a professional and me.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So they're professionals, but they're not actors.
No.
And so we get them singing. You have these two tambourine players who I guess are supposed to be like mannequins who came to life.
Yeah.
They're not in Starship.
No.
We have the drummer who looks as cool as can be.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And you gotta, definitely not going to get charged with assault one day.
No. You got a guy playing guitar just in the back corner.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got the bassist and guitarist who are, I mean, I'm not giving their names because they didn't even play on the track. I know they're in Starship.
Yeah.
But they're very happy to be there. And everyone has a certain type of 80s hair that to me is achievable if I were to grow my hair a bit out. But I'm not sure if it looks very good.
But it wasn't over the top 80s hair.
No.
It wasn't like, overly teased out or anything.
No. So it looks like they must have blow dried their hair, put it up, and then throw some hairspray on it.
Yeah.
But it didn't look particularly good to me. But I feel like this is what a kid would look like showing up in high school in grade 12.
87 was a bad year for hair in the 80s.
Okay. That's in your hair files.
Yeah.
They all look like my neighbor's older cousins who'd show up and they're like Camaros.
Yeah.
That's all I could describe it as. And it was 1987. They also turn the hose on and off for poor Hollywood Montrose.
Yes.
So Grace turns it on for him. But then Mickey, I don't know why he turned it off. Hollywood Montrose is doing good work there.
Exactly. In the movie, there would have been no confrontation in the back of the warehouse had the hose kept going.
Right. Mickey really ruined everything.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He almost ruined Andrew McCarthy and Kim Cattrall's chance at love.
Yeah, totally. Thank goodness Andrew McCarthy saved her.
And then Estelle Getty came in with the videotape. And we're going back to the movie here. I love the proof of the security system is I have proof here on this physical videotape that I brought here just to show you, but you can't see anything on it because we don't have a VCR right now, but this is proof and all the cops believe me and they're going to arrest people.
I love it. They go straight to arrest mode.
Yeah.
No Miranda rights either.
No.
I heard. So I think the guy was probably going to be able to get off on these charges.
Yeah.
Are they singing in windows in this? It's like each, is only one window display or are they in several window displays?
I thought it was just one window display.
There's a couple others and we get clips from the movie and some of those montage sequences in the movie are just ridiculous. I don't know why they had scenes where they just dressed up. I don't know. Why am I even asking this question?
Bill,
this
the movie was 87% montages.
Yeah. But if it was 90%, it'd be Rocky IV.
Yeah, it's true. That was an 80s thing to do.
Right? Yeah, it was. It was music video time. Why am I even judging this? It's not a judgment.
Judge.
I enjoyed it. I watched it really easily. It was easily digestible. I still haven't finished Oppenheimer. I watched the first hour. I'm like, oh, man.
You got two more hours.
Two more hours to go. And so I'm picking these other movies, but I guess I'm doing that with music too.
Yeah, true.
Fair enough. At the end, he decides to become a mannequin.
Well, the whole band becomes mannequins.
Well, okay.
Which, were they mannequins all along? Was this just some sort of fever dream? What's going on?
That's like the Twilight Zone thing.
Exactly.
It's also kind of like that Cars video.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What is up with this mannequin thing? Also, I watched really closely. The Mickey Thomas mannequin is actually Mickey Thomas.
Wait. So they just sort of...
They had him stand still. I'm convinced of it because Grace Slick definitely looks like a really good mannequin of Grace Slick. But if you look at it, that Mickey Thomas mannequin looks exactly like Mickey Thomas. And it also moves slightly.
Okay, so they didn't inject him with a paralytic or something like that.
No, which probably would have worked. But then they would have had to keep wiping his mouth for the drool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never had a paralytic done... Is that what they're called, paralytics?
I don't know. I've been rewatching episodes of House, and they say that in a couple of them, so I assume it's a thing.
Okay. Now, there is another video out there of people who actually look like they're singing, and that would be...
The Skeleton Twins?
Yeah.
Did you watch that, eh?
I watched that scene. I can't watch that movie. It looks too depressing.
It's a very, very, very dark comedic.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't do it. I have it here, but I haven't been able to watch it.
My friend Liz suggested this movie to me in the height of COVID, I think. Actually, I think it was after our first couple of episodes came out for the podcast, and she listened to them, and she mentioned this song and that scene from the movie. It was like almost 4 years later, and I finally watched the movie that she suggested because, well, you know, there wasn't a lot of time to do things like, you know, just watch TV COVID when you're unemployed and home alone. So, Liz, thanks for suggesting the movie. I like the movie. I mean, it was dark and everything, but it was great. And this scene is just, it's so bonkers good.
It's a crazy scene. You have Bill Hader, who does the lion's share of the work until he finally convinces Kristen Wiig to go for it.
Who does the gray slick parts. Oh, so good.
It's great. And it just shows you what actors can do.
Yeah.
They can look like they're singing, even though they're not singing. This goes back to what Val Kilmer said about being an actor, is that actors actually know the people they're playing better than the people because they're actors.
Yes.
And then, of course, when someone said, but what if someone played you? I said, well, they wouldn't know me better because I'm an actor.
Yeah. It's called Double Jeopardy, Bill.
That's right. That's right. Negative times a negative is a positive.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So, all right, we nailed that. How about some categories?
Let's hit it.
Okay. I want to bring this one back.
Okay.
For this episode.
All right.
Who could duet this with Michael Bolton?
Oh, good call.
Okay. And now I have this. Michael Bolton is doing the Grace Slick part. There's no way anyone else is going to do it but Michael Bolton.
So we need someone who's doing the lower register stuff.
Yeah.
Oh,
I thought about Mariah Carey, but she'd be so mad because she'd want the Michael Bolton Grace Slick part.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I want lower register Mariah. What do you think of Miley Cyrus?
As a person?
No, as doing the song. She could go low.
Because she has that lower voice, right? Yeah.
I think she could do it.
I could see that. Well, I mean, the movie involved time travel too, so we can time travel Miley Cyrus back to the 80s to do this with Michael Bolton.
I was just thinking they'd sing it now, but you want them singing the 80s. Okay, so you're thinking of Bolton of the 80s. Now, Bolton of the 80s, like his voice is even more powerful.
Oh, yeah. Nothing's going to stop him now.
Yeah.
You could get Linda Ronstadt to do it because she did the lower parts with Aaron Neville.
Very good. That's a good call. Done.
Done. Universal Music, make this happen. Or whoever has the contracts for these two singers.
Do you have the original people they were thinking of?
Yeah, they originally wanted it to be sung by either Laura Branigan and John Parr.
Two people we've featured on this podcast. Yeah.
Or Patti LaBelle and Michael McDonald.
And On Our Own, I think, did go to number one at some point.
Yes.
There's things to do. We haven't touched Patti LaBelle or Michael McDonald.
Well, I tried once, but I got stopped by security.
Yeah, the Doobie Brothers were down here before. Yeah, I was really hoping we could get free tickets.
Yeah, no. Well, on the strength of the podcast, right?
Yeah. I guess we should have asked somebody.
I assume that people are just going to give us free stuff eventually.
Yeah, I think we should really start to kind of put ourselves out there. Next category. Favorite part. What's your favorite part? Or one of the parts that brings you absolute joy? I don't want to put the pressure on that you pick a favorite part, but part when you hear this, you're like, oh yeah.
Easily the Grace Slick part in the pre-chorus.
Yep.
It's like, let them say we're crazy. There's so much joy there.
Mine is toward the end of the song.
Yeah.
She says, woo-hoo!
And that just
brings back memories of listening to the song, knowing exactly where I was in the song. Like, okay, I have about 30 seconds left to enjoy this.
Yeah.
And when you are listening to music in the 80s and you don't even have like a tape recorder yet, you don't know if you'll ever hear the song again. Like, are there moments where I thought, will I never hear this song again?
Yeah.
And then who sang the song? Because I didn't know it was Starship. I didn't even know who that was. I didn't even know the name. I knew it was a mannequin, but I wouldn't have known how to find out the name of songs. And then if I didn't hear them again, what would happen? It's a lot of pressure and tension.
Can I make a confession to you?
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s, when I was a younger man or younger child, I didn't understand how recordings and radios work. I thought there was always a lineup of musicians at all of these radio stations, and they just played everything live.
Wow.
Yeah. I think I still believe it a little bit. But could you imagine, though, like, there's Elton John talking to Michael Jackson, just waiting in line, just like, yeah, I go on at 5:43. What time do you go on at? Oh, I'm right after you. I'm 5:48. It's like, okay, perfect. And they're just, you know, talking.
I imagine you think there's still really a backing track, though, they're singing to. Would that be fair? Or do you think the band was in there playing?
I have no idea. I thought maybe the whole band. I don't know. Do you want to end the podcast with me now? Because I don't understand how recording works.
That's good. It's so weird. Well, you know, there are so many things we just assume were truth.
Yeah.
When we were younger, where it was like, where did that idea even come from?
Yeah.
It's something to ponder. So open question, listeners. I'm going to put it in the Spotify thing. We're going to change the thing, like, what do you think of the episode, to what is the strange thing you believed to be true when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Maybe that'll get people responding.
Maybe we'll get someone writing it down. Who knows?
All right, I got questions for you. This is another category. Mannequin versus other 80s movies.
Okay.
Okay, and how it stands up. Mannequin versus Police Academy 4.
Which one was Police Academy 4?
Citizens on Patrol with Sharon Stone. And the last one was Steve Gutenberg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Police Academy 4 because of Bobcat Goldthwait.
Right. That's the second one.
Well,
that's his third one.
But he becomes a recurring character.
I feel if I said Police Academy 3, 2, or 1, you'd easily go with those other ones.
Yeah.
I like those Police Academies, but I never saw the actual versions, only the TV versions.
Yeah, I think Police Academy 4 was the last one that I really remember. Like, Police Academy 5, was that the one that was shot in Toronto?
Mission in Miami. Probably shot in Toronto. The first four were all shot in Toronto as well. They're all Toronto movies.
Which one's the one that had the jet skis?
3.
That was 3. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, you see
clearly see the CN Tower in the background. Yeah, that's right.
They have like a consistent 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And I thought they were great.
I thought they were amazing.
So this is why we're like, Mannequin? Like, it's not a stretch. I'm like, listen, I watch the Police Academies a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, how about Crocodile Dundee versus Mannequin?
Crocodile Dundee.
Okay, how about Weekend at Bernie's versus Mannequin?
Mannequin.
Whoa, I see. I was going to go Weekend at Bernie's for sure. Wow, okay. We have a big disagreement here.
I just don't like dead people.
What about mannequins?
They're not dead. They're okay. Not people.
Okay, all right.
I just wanted to disagree with you on that one.
Yeah. I'd say Weekend at Bernie's 2 is definitely worse than Mannequin.
Yeah, because of the voodoo.
Yeah, but Mannequin 2 is worse than Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Mannequin 2 is worse than probably 104% of the movies that have been made.
That is true. That is very true. I almost struggled to find a movie that Mannequin beat in my 80s. But I think I found one.
Okay.
And that movie is actually from the 90s.
Oh.
Young Guns 2.
Oh!
Mannequin is definitely better than Young Guns 2.
Can I add one to this?
Yeah.
Mannequin versus Mac and Me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, like, because Mac and Me, did that get even full release?
I think it did.
Mannequin. Okay. But now, of course, as I got older, I would watch Mac and Me for like the McDonald's dance scene. Is incredible.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the kid going off the cliff in the wheelchair.
Yeah. Well, I've seen it every time Paul Rudd came on Conan.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
All right. Next one then for you is, this is your category. Yeah. Nominees for the Oscars.
So who else was nominated this year?
Now,
so we didn't even mention this.
No, we haven't yet.
Mannequin was nominated for an Oscar.
It was. So best song. And we said a couple of weeks ago on our Ryan Gosling podcast, like, oh, the awards don't matter. Starship never won. And I started listing all these other songs that won. But then I realized who actually beat them. And I don't want to say I want to eat crow, because that disgusts me, the idea of eating a full crow.
And
even if it was cooked.
Full of parasites.
Ugh. Even if it was cooked, I wouldn't want to eat it.
Yeah.
Maybe deep fried.
Yeah.
But without the beak, I don't think that's eatable. You make that into a soup. Okay, give me those nominees.
All right. Nominated for best song used in a motion picture.
And lead up to the winner.
Obviously.
Okay. Sorry.
This is my first time doing this, Bill. Nothing's going to stop us now from Mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
Storybook Love from The Princess Bride.
That's a wicked, awesome song.
It's such a good song. I love that song. Cry Freedom from Cry Freedom.
Yeah, I don't remember that song, but I did see Neither Cry Freedom. Watching grade 7 in class.
Okay.
I don't know if that was appropriate.
Probably not. Shakedown from Beverly Hills Cop 2, which is a great song.
Is it?
Shakedown. breakdown. You're busted.
Who's saying it? Who's saying it?
It was sung by Bob Seger.
Oh, right.
But it was written by
those two guys,
Harold Faltmeyer and Keith Forsey, who did Axel F. From the first Beverly Hills.
We got to talk Axel F at some point.
Yeah, that's a great song. The winner is I've Had the Time of My Life from the Dirty Dancing soundtrack.
Unstoppable.
Oh, yeah.
So I know
it's going to stop that song.
Yeah, I'll tell you what stops that song. You have Bill Medley and Jennifer Warrens and Dirty Dancing. That is unfortunate when you have to, like, basically go up against something like that.
I mean, there's no winning.
Brian Orser wins the gold, if not for Boitano.
Yeah.
Dirty Dancing is the Boitano, am I right? I mean, oh, no, it's not, because Nothing's Gonna Stop Us didn't trip during the long program.
You know so much about 1988 figure skating.
Oh, man, there's so much pain in us watching Brian Orser just slip up. And it was just a tiny slip up. When you watch the Olympics now, they just take full on like falls. They go with Jose Chouinard style where they just keep going down. But
she was always smiling.
She was. There's much more to talk about for Boitano, Orser, and Petrenko.
Yeah, this is going to be part of our figure skating podcast.
Yeah. Later. Yeah. Should we go to mixtape?
I think so, yeah.
All right, here's my mixtape.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to go first because I feel like yours is going to be a lot stronger than mine.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie, I struggled
with
the creation of this mixtape. Usually I like to pull a theme out of the song, but I feel like the theme of triumph over adversity and all of that has been done a lot. So a lot of the songs I would have picked already.
Okay.
So this is a texture. This is similar feel.
All right.
To Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now by Starship.
Spacey songs.
Or 80s songs.
Okay.
The Power of Love by Huey Lewis and the News.
Oh, okay.
Because also the power of Andrew McCarthy's Love.
That's right.
Brought her to love.
Also, also a movie song.
Yeah, that's right. These Dreams by Heart. Your Love by The Outfield.
All right, this is great. I mean, because These Dreams has that
dreamy feel. Well, it has that spacey feel, yeah.
And then Your Love... Well, it's just a great song.
It's about your love.
Oh, it is. The love of that person, the unrequited sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mannequin he was in love with.
Yeah. And it's not weird to love a mannequin.
No.
We Don't Need Another Hero by Tina Turner.
Is this out of Thunderdome?
Yes.
Oh, we got lots of movies. Actually, I think all of our stuff could be from movies.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
You know, we made a theme of a month, so, you know.
Yeah, all right, gotcha. Yeah.
Tell It to My Heart by Taylor Dane.
Love the song.
And then I'm finishing it off with Valerie by Steve
Winwood. Oh, that is a great, great tune.
And it has those spacey kind of synthy keys in it, too.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is like one of the great, great songs of all time.
Okay. So maybe my mixtape wasn't so bad, Bill.
It wasn't so bad. I feel it was like an interesting potpourri or cornucopia of 80s tunes. I originally had 5. I dropped it down to 4 just to keep the power going.
Okay.
And I went with sparkly songs. Okay.
Not space twinkles?
Not space twinkles, gotcha. Although these could be space twinkles. First up, and I am stepping on songs we've done before, Waiting for a Star to Fall.
Oh, yes, please.
You can hear the sparkles immediately at the opening.
That is such a good song.
Next up, the ultimate sparkly song. So it's going to be in the middle. So this is kind of like a maybe like a normal distribution, Frank. Everywhere, Fleetwood Mac.
Nice. And also normal distribution. You're going to have to explain that in the show notes to everybody,
okay,
including myself.
Okay. And then next up, I went with something a little more modern, but that harkens back to a better time. Shut Up and Dance with Me. Walk the Moon.
Oh, nice.
I love that song.
Yeah.
I feel there's an episode waiting to be done because it belongs in this guilt-free pleasure.
Absolutely, verse. It does.
And I'm ending with a song that I want to dedicate to you, who ran some sort of training race before you got here. I just call everything that's running a race. Yeah. I know it was like some sort of practice where you barely got through.
Yeah.
You stumbled through after having to watch one of the not-so-great movies of all time.
Came but surprisingly here, watchable.
Surprisingly watchable. You came here and did it. So this song is called Cut to the Feeling by Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yes!
Sparkles, sparkles everywhere.
Oh, this is my favorite Carly Rae Jepsen song still.
Yeah. This mixtape is designed to lift your spirits.
Oh,
Frank.
No. You know what? Spirits lifted. That is... Oh, yes, please.
All right. So there is one more category because you were going to bring it to the table.
Yeah.
What is it?
What other movie could this song be a part of?
Okay. You got one already?
I got one in the tank. I'm going to give you an opportunity.
I feel it needs to be a movie where the people involved are like getting together despite everything being against them. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have a couple ideas here.
Okay.
One is Pride and Prejudice, where Wickham marries, or at least pledges to marry, the sister of Elizabeth, but he doesn't mean that he's going to do it because he's such a bad dude.
Yeah.
Darcy knows he's bad, but Wickham is such a little jerk face that he has kind of insinuated himself in Elizabeth's life and made her think that Darcy's bad, but Darcy's not bad. It was Wickham who's bad and tried to get with his sister, right? And then he now is getting with Elizabeth's younger sister, and it's horrible because it's ruining the family name, but then Darcy forces him to marry Elizabeth's younger sister.
What I love is that you have just described Pride and Prejudice to me, because I have not read Pride and Prejudice. I have not watched the movies other than Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which I have read the book and watched the movie.
Well, it's in there somewhere. It's in there somewhere. Yeah. Fantastic book.
But there's no zombies, apparently, in the original.
No. So it's a lot shorter, I think.
Yeah.
All right. So this one. The other was probably the most obvious would be Terminator 1.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you figure?
Well, until Kyle Reese dies, I think they thought nothing was going to stop
him. Oh, okay.
In their love.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then he got killed by the Terminator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did he? Yeah, how'd the Terminator kill him? Just hit him?
I don't know, shot him, killed him.
Yeah. Oh, poor Kyle Reese.
Poor Kyle Reese.
Okay. All right. Do you have something that can match my two excellent choices?
Well, I think so. So the song is about overcoming adversity, enduring, a couple just being so right that nothing's going to stop them from being together. And this song would work so well for the ending of The Shawshank Redemption.
You know.
You imagine the scene, Red walking down the beach to see Andy sanding the boat.
Oh, man.
Nothing's going to stop us now.
Yeah, that's good. Now, I also want the Dirty Dancing lift in there just to sort of add to it.
Red runs to Andy and they do the lift. Oh, that's so perfect.
Shawshank Redemption should have won Best Picture. I don't care what it was up against.
It was up against Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction and two others.
Shawshank Redemption is a true movie.
Yeah.
I know Pulp Fiction made a difference.
Yeah.
And Forrest Gump, we're all kind of trying to pretend that we weren't taken up in.
Yeah.
I liked Forrest Gump. But Shawshank Redemption is the one.
Oh, yeah. That's the better movie. That's why it's shown on TBS constantly.
That's right. That and The Christmas Story.
Yes.
Well, dear listener, I hope you've enjoyed our March Movie Madness Month, and I hope you're not worried that this is some sort of ending. It's no ending. In Bill and Frank's world, we're always kind of at the beginning, or at least in the present. You know why, Frank?
No. Tell me.
Because nothing's going to stop us now.
And when we told people about our plan for March and doing songs all about movies, you know what? We said, let them say we're crazy. What do they know? This is Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures.